Welcome to the Dive into Reiki podcast. I'm Natalie, and together we will enjoy a series of conversations that explore the journey of Reiki practitioners and teachers from all lineages. 100% Reiki-focused stories, 100% human. Hi, and welcome to today's episode of the Dive into Reiki podcast. And I have a surprise. Someone I saw a post probably a year and a half ago on Instagram, and I was like, ooh, that person is interesting for the podcast. Then lost track, and now here she is. Her name is Kate Parrott. She's originally from the UK, but she's been living in Ubud, Bali, which I hope I'm pronouncing well, where she operates the Little School of Reiki, which combines teachings from traditional Japanese lineages with Western Reiki practices, offering a down-to-earth, digestible approach to sacred esoteric healing system. Kate will share with us why she decided to stay in Bali, which I'm dying to know, and how she built her business and her plans for the future. Thank you so much, Kate, for saying yes and being here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been lovely. Like, Natalie and I have actually just kind of started working together a little bit with mentoring sessions, which has been really nice, just kind of getting me kind of inspired and helping to deepen my own practice and teaching. But yeah, how I kind of ended up where I am now, there was definitely no grand plan whatsoever. I think it was about 8 years ago. I was just living in London, not really feeling very happy, just not really loving my job or kind of living in London, and just knew I needed a change. So
what kind of job did you do? I have no idea what you did before.
I mean, I've actually had quite a few different types of jobs, but yeah. I come from a mixture of like an art background and also just kind of like a more like admin-y events type background. So what actually happened was I'd done, you know, a lot of these jobs with kind of admin jobs, events types jobs, and then went to university quite late on. Like, I didn't go till I was 27 to do a fine art degree, and thought, okay, I'm going to like combine all this, and found what I thought was like my perfect job. I was working for this like really like quite well-known art fair, and was kind of like managing the events and working with artists. And I also at the time had, without really any effort, I had an agent who was representing me for the artwork I was making myself. So I was still able to then keep making my own work. She was then, doing exhibitions and selling my work for it. And it was literally like ticking every box that I thought I wanted. And I was just like, why am I not enjoying this? And it wasn't really that conscious, but I was just like, oh, I need a change. And actually, I think initially I was just looking for new jobs, just job hunting, and then randomly came across this job in Borneo. And I was like, oh, I hadn't really thought about like leaving the country, but why not? And so went, applied for this kind of, it was like a volunteer position in Borneo, went there as kind of just like a starting point. And then was there for about 3 months, and then sort of went traveling around Asia a little bit. But I was kind of, I knew I was searching for something. And actually, when I went to Thailand, I started doing these Thai massage courses. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. I really loved these. And I could feel like, yeah, I could feel stuff that I hadn't felt before. And I loved the people as well, like all the people on my course. I was like, oh my gosh, these are my people. And they were all doing yoga and meditation. And I literally like threw myself into it. So I started going to yoga classes with them. I went and did like a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat. And then I started looking for jobs at yoga centers. And I think by this point, I'd probably done like 10 yoga classes. Got this job in Cambodia, working in the office of this kind of yoga and healing center.
You can just as tourists go and work everywhere. That's amazing.
It was, you know, it was just this like, oh, okay, here we are, here we're going. And And then, yeah, I got to Cambodia, and actually it was run by a couple, and the lady was a Reiki master, and she had been practicing and teaching for, I think, at least 10 years by this point, and was really, you know, she was really good, actually. And she'd recently done a crystal healing course, and so she wanted people to practice on. And so she would gave me these kind of mixture of like Reiki and crystal healing sessions. And I was just like, well, what is this? Like, I was really excited by it. And I loved it there as well. It was like, I was living in the community, you know, in between work, I could join all the classes. And I ended up working for them for kind of one season. And then I kind of covered all the admin stuff for them while they were closed during the rainy season, and then went back for the second season. And she very kindly kind of gave me the Reiki trainings as a gift. She's kind of said, oh, wow. I know you really want to do the Reiki. I want to kind of gift the level one and two trainings to you. So
this was two levels. That's amazing.
Yeah. And she taught just for kind of like, you know, for Reiki trainings, she taught fairly long trainings. So she did 6-day trainings for each level. So it was like 12 days all in one go. It was very intense. I have to say, I was exhausted, and I was working. I was also working while I was doing it as well. And when I learned the Reiki, because I'd already done the Thai massage, and by this point I'd actually also done a pranic healing course, and those were both modalities that I very much kind of used as like things I could give to other people, and I thought the Reiki was going to be the same. And oh my gosh, it just completely caught me by surprise on this. And I mean, I look back now and I really wasn't that aware of like what was going on, but it just like became this catalyst for this huge kind of like deep personal healing journey, basically.
That is amazing. I'm also very impressed, because it sounds easy. I went to Cambodia and I looked for a job, like the bravery of it and like the resourcefulness of it, right? It's like sometimes we want things, but you also were Googling and acting and calling and reaching out, which is the part sometimes we visualize, but you were like, you were going for it.
I guess it definitely requires some action to be taken. And this is the case with all of this sort of stuff. It's like a mixture of sort of, you know, you get sort of put in certain situations where you meet the right person or whatever, but then you've also got to actually do something as well.
Exactly. And what was from Reiki? Because again, you did Thai massage, you did pranic healing, you've been doing yoga. What was from Reiki that felt like so like different, so unique for you?
It was interesting, because I at the time thought I loved the Thai massage, and I was certainly, you know, very interested in the pranic healing as well, but the Reiki was just, there was something clicked. It was just like another level of, I think it was the self-healing part that felt so different to the other practices. I think also for me, the attunements made a really, really big difference. Certainly for me, it was actually quite instant, where I had my first attunement and then I went and did like a yoga class, and I was lying in Shavasana and I just had all this electricity just like charging through my body. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wasn't feeling this before. And very, very, very instantly, I could just suddenly feel stuff that I couldn't feel before. And this like really just, I guess, just kind of captured my interest so much as well.
And you said something I had never, like I knew it, but I had never like really realized the difference. Very few practices have self-care like Reiki. Like, yeah, massage, you always will give a massage, or you need someone to massage you. You can do some self-massage, but it's not the same. Reiki really has that strong pillar of self-healing compared to other modalities, which is amazing, even though a lot of trainings keep it and skip it more and more. So I think it's beautiful that you mention it and highlight it.
Yeah, I'd say it's one of the reasons why I love teaching it as well. I feel like this is where the biggest impacts come. I mean, it's lovely to be able to give sessions to other people for sure, but the self-practice is kind of where the magic happens, actually.
Yeah, totally agree with that one. And so you are Reiki 2 level in Cambodia, and what happened next? Like, this is like, I'm already like in my Eat, Pray, Love, but more exciting version of the movie, and more real as well.
So yeah, I worked there for probably about a year and a half. And then, you know, I knew I wanted to do the Reiki. I think also for me, it was the first thing in my life I'd ever been like really excited about something. So I knew there was like something different. I was very dedicated with my practice, which also this wasn't something which I wasn't someone who was naturally very disciplined or anything like this. So I knew, okay, this is something special. And I knew I kind of wanted to pursue it. And so after I kind of left Cambodia, I went to Thailand and I did my kind of first Reiki master training there. I also did yoga teacher training. And, you know, it was kind of a time of just learning and a lot of self-healing, actually. But it was, I'll be honest, it was a really quite challenging transition because I decided, okay, I want to do this kind of new thing, but I didn't really know where to start. And I went from this place of finding it very easy and natural to practice on people as a new practitioner, being really open about like, yeah, I'm new, like I just want to practice on people, to then being like, I want to do this professionally and charge money for it. And then I put all these kind of restrictions on myself. And basically like just blocked my sort of ability to move into this professionally. And I had a lot of resistance also to maybe doing like a part-time job on the side that sort of, you know, just kind of allowed me to make a little bit of money. And so I also knew nothing about marketing. My idea of marketing was like putting up a few posters and like spamming some Facebook groups. So I had no idea what I was doing. I got very short of money, like scarily low on money. And I was just like, what do I do? And I then created this belief that I couldn't actually make money from the Reiki. I couldn't do it as a profession. And I thought, okay, well, let's try the yoga instead. So I started applying for like yoga teaching jobs. And that was actually how I ended up coming to Indonesia. I got offered a job in Indonesia, in Gili Air, and that's what kind of brought me over there. And so it was actually, you know, it was professionally, it was a great opportunity because I was also a new yoga teacher. And so I was teaching yoga. I was also doing the Reiki sessions. So in that sense, you know, it was great. But it was, you know, I'd created so many kind of expectations of myself as a new practitioner, trying to pretend to be more experienced than I was and feeling like people wouldn't trust me, you know. And so.
Check. Yes. I'm so grateful you're sharing this because I think, I don't know, probably some people don't, but I think most of us go to this when we want to do the switch. And I think most people stay there. So I'm so grateful you're sharing this because you are talking and I'm like, you know, it just is so real.
It was a really difficult transition actually in a lot of ways. And, you know, actually what happened was I ended up teaching sort of the yoga for a while. And I'd never intended to teach the Reiki initially. When I did the master training, I just wanted to do it to deepen my practice. I was giving sessions at this point, but then people kept asking me to teach them Reiki. And I was kind of in this position where I was, you know, working for yoga centers or whatever, and I wasn't allowed to do kind of other things on the side or didn't have time for it. And so I kept having to say like, no. And eventually, you know, got to the point where I was like, it'd be quite nice to try and create some space for this, actually. So eventually kind of got to the point where I thought, I want to focus more on the Reiki. And so I actually stopped teaching yoga, decided to like really like go full in on the Reiki. Again, like it sort of didn't just suddenly work. So eventually I got to the point where I was like, okay, I need some money. And I started doing some online work. And it was just kind of, it was really lovely, like working for these guys who made personalized comics, who have an Etsy shop. Very, very sweet business, lovely people to work for. And I was just doing a few hours of this in the evening, and this just like took the pressure off. I had a little bit of money. I could relax. I didn't have to just throw everything on the Reiki. And this was the game changer, actually. And, you know, I'm so, so grateful for kind of, it took me a long time to get to that point, but I'm so grateful for it. And then eventually it did sort of get to the point where I was like, okay, the Reiki is working now. Then I could drop the part-time job and just go full in on the Reiki. But it was, you know, very, very long kind of up and downy type journey, actually.
But I think you're mentioning a couple of very important things, like don't put all the economic pressure. And again, you live in Asia that is even like a little cheaper, but people who live in cities like in Europe or in New York, right? Like living in New York, like my rent is probably the budget of a family for a year, like in another country. So putting that pressure, especially if you're a beginner practitioner, like it's hard and no experience of marketing. There are some people who know sales and marketing and they're probably better set up for that. But then they have the challenge of they need to deepen the practice, right? But I think doing it with like a little security net so you can take the pressure off is such a great tip to share with everyone, you know, because it will bring every fear you have up, like setting up those businesses.
It really does, actually. It's something which I don't think, I mean, people who run their own businesses where it's not kind of something that's so deeply personal, it's a different kind of thing. But I mean, when you're doing this kind of work, it brings up so much stuff. You get, you know, once you start to understand a little bit about marketing, you get to a point where you're like, okay, I want to do an Instagram video. Why am I not doing this? And then, you know, the blocks just kind of keep showing up and you can't actually get sort of past to the next stage of your business until you've done the personal healing to kind of move through that.
And again, that's where self-practice, right? A lot of people try to do their business, then they put all the energy in the business and they leave the self-practice aside. But the self-practice is actually the fuel for the business. It's no, because I'm thinking, like, when I post about Instagram, I literally post whatever I'm practicing at the moment. Like, I don't write a post like trying to be witty or like the precepts. I literally post whatever I've been practicing that week. And if I don't come up with anything, then you'll see less posts, but they are very personal. And I think a Reiki business, as you said, is very personalized. Your own voice is your own practice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is also kind of a challenge where you sort of, you want to show yourself, you want to kind of, you know, be authentic, but then it's like finding that line, like, am I oversharing? Do I want to share this little bit of my life? Have I actually kind of worked with it enough that I feel comfortable to then kind of share that part? All of that kind of stuff.
Sometimes we don't need to overshare, right? I think I was thinking of the shift like 6 years ago where like people are brands, like you're your brand and all that message and like everybody will share everything. And now I think you're not a brand. You have a practice and a business. I think we're going back to sanity, right? Do we need to share every detail of our self-practice? No, right? We can have the privacy. But I want to know, so you are starting your business and how did you build it? Because I love the fact that you knew nothing about business, right? Because most of Reiki practitioners listening to this may not. So I think that is also, obviously, I think all of us have the fantasy of going to Bali and set up a life like you did. So how did you start like to build a business, like do budgets, calculate classes versus sessions, like marketing yourself? How did you... did you study? Did you train? Or did you just...
Well, a little bit. So I think it was during COVID when I think everyone just got a little bit of space sort of just, you know, do a bit of back end work. And I was like, okay, I need some help with this. So I actually signed up for this business coaching course. And the lady who was running it, when we did sort of one of our first calls, she was like, I've read your whole website and I still have no idea what Reiki is. And I was like, oh, okay. And basically, I became very aware that like my messaging wasn't, you know, working. I wasn't communicating it in a way that people were understanding it. I also hadn't really, I think, and this is probably so common because it's a really difficult practice to put into words. And so I was doing the same thing that I think a lot of people do, where you're sort of just like regurgitating a lot of stuff that your teachers have taught you. And I wasn't actually taking the time to think like, how does this feel in my own body? What's my personal experience of this? And this was the switch, actually, where I really took the time to find my own words to talk about it. Also, I think in terms of just the general branding as well, finding a way of representing myself that felt, you know, like people were really getting a flavor of like me. And so this then also meant that I started attracting people who were like people I loved teaching and were really easy to teach and just kind of clicked with the practice really well. But this took, to be honest, quite a lot of like practical learning. And still now I'm still just kind of like getting the hang of this. I'd say the other thing as well was when I first started teaching Reiki, because I'd done my level one and two trainings in groups, I just immediately assumed this was how you teach Reiki. And so I was, you know, posting these kind of group training dates, no one was signing up. And I was kind of like, oh, but then I would keep getting people interested in doing one-to-one trainings. And so I kept at the time seeing these as sort of like practice. But then eventually I got to the point where I was like, oh, maybe this is just it. Maybe this is like just the way I teach. And so let go of this whole group stuff and taught one-to-one actually for a very long time, to the point where I was then teaching full-time. Like I was teaching one-to-one sessions like 5 days a week, and eventually got to the point where I was fully booked and I was having to turn people away basically. And then thought, well, shall I just try and post some group dates now? And then it worked. Then people just started signing up for the group trainings. This kind of took, gave me a bit of space, just took the pressure off having to like just do one-to-ones. And I actually really like the mix. I like doing the groups. I like doing the one-to-ones. I don't teach big groups. I still like it small. I'm somebody who naturally likes a more like intimate kind of relationship with people in general. But this was kind of a transition that just, you know, I kind of just had to roll with it. It kind of came when it came and I couldn't force it to happen when I wanted it to. And this is actually happening a little bit with the online stuff as well, interestingly, where I teach also online, but at the moment it's still one-to-one. And again, I can feel this picking up. And I think probably it won't be long until I'm doing one-to-one online group trainings as well. And again, I kind of like the mix. I like the mix of in-person and online, actually.
Yeah, it's funny. I like small groups too. And I teach some one-to-one because every time I try to put dates, it's almost like some people can one Saturday, not the other. Like, and then I'm like, I like teaching one-to-one. I like the mix of small groups, one-to-one. Some years I teach more groups. Some, like, I think being flexible as well with where you are is a good idea. Like, as you say, like, yes, some people do teach Reiki a certain way or do sessions a certain way. We can adapt it to who we are. And I think that's very important as well. And for me, online too is consistency. Like the Patreon at the beginning were like 6 people. Now, like there's 70 members, right? But it's 3 years of consistency. So also sometimes we try to set up a business, we try to teach a class and then we quit because nobody signs up. But you were persistent. Like, consistency and persistence is a big, big factor as well. Like, not
giving, yeah,
you know, it's, and you've been relentlessly, like, there you are, like, you know, it's,
it has felt a bit like that. And even with the sessions, I definitely don't do as many sessions as I used to. But I think it's really important to just kind of keep that part of it up as well, so I still stay connected with what it's like to, you know, just be a practitioner and what I'm kind of teaching people to do.
Well, that's lovely. So what is your percentage sessions versus teaching, approximately?
I'm doing a lot more teaching than sessions. Sessions, you know, I'm probably doing like, I don't know, maybe like 3 sessions a week, something like that. And then the teaching, yeah, it's kind of, as I said, it's going through a little bit of a transition at the moment where now I'm offering these kind of group trainings. I'm actually getting a little bit more space. Whereas, you know, for at least like 1 or 2 years, I was just teaching five days a week, basically, which was a lot. And I would often teach during the day, and then I would do a session in the evening, which, you know, then can feel like quite a long day, actually.
And again, like, then you don't have time for self-practice. And one thing also, as you teach and practice, you want to, like, also feed your practice, take your own trainings. Like, in my case, I like to travel, or like now with this Buddhist monk, or like doing different things that can help you grow your practice. So it's good that you have some time as well, which, again, something we don't always do when we have a business, right? We're like, I need to do the admin, I need to do the posting, I need, and then we forget the practice is your business. You need to practice. It's quite amazing. So what are some of your goals? Because now, like, we can say, and I love the name, by the way, The Little School of Reiki. I think it's like the cutest and beautiful name.
Thank you.
What are your goals? Like, now you're established, again, you're moving online. What are some of your dreams? Almost like your Reiki dream.
Gosh, I mean, I think for me, and I was chatting to you a little bit about this when we first kind of had our first call, but I think for me, something that I have always felt right from the beginning is that I want to do as much as I can to help support people after their trainings to keep practicing, because I know what it's like, you know, like, life gets in the way. Especially, you know, often I teach people in Bali, then they go home back to their normal lives, their normal jobs. They're in, you know, a very sort of normal Western society. And it becomes harder, actually, to keep up your practice. And so, sort of creating more sort of offerings to support this. So at the moment, I've started offering kind of monthly Reiki shares, which I'm sort of wanting to grow this side of things, sort of, you know, similar to what your patronage is, actually doing a mixture of kind of online stuff and also some kind of pre-recorded things that people can then just kind of use in their own time. This is something, you know, I really want to kind of make a bit bigger.
Yeah, and it's fantastic because the time difference actually works. Like, you know, like, if you time it well. And I think, again, the more resources like this we can have for everyone, like, also, especially you're in Bali, but like, I, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, this is for me an escape. Like, I can practice with you in Bali. I'm like, so happy, right? And for those of you who are listening and not looking at the video, she's like, it is in a beautiful background, wooden, very beachy. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like 27 Fahrenheit in New York. At least it was sunny. But it is such, there is a sensation of peacefulness that is beautiful, especially, as you say, when we go back to our daily lives after a Reiki training, right? Like, it may be winter, it's rainy. So it's something lovely. Another thing I love about you is you're very curious. Like, you've trained on a lot of trainings and you experiment with different, like, you're not close up to lineages. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because you have
this
depth of experience that is really worthwhile sharing.
Yeah, this has been very interesting, actually, because I think probably like a lot of people, you do your level 1 and 2 training and you just have this assumption that that's kind of like how they're taught by everyone everywhere. And then you start to find in your own practice that sometimes things aren't matching up. And then you start to kind of question. And I think also, you know, starting to just kind of read different Reiki books, or kind of, you know, discovering kind of podcasts. And actually, you know, there was quite, I remember searching for people who were doing things differently. And it took me quite a while to find this, actually. And then eventually, once I started to sort of find one person, then I started to, and I was like, oh, okay, there's like quite a lot of different approaches to this. And I think this kind of was what, there's actually a lady cutting down some bananas in my garden right now. this then sort of opened my mind, like, okay, there's actually like kind of different ways of doing these things. And I think also the level one and two training, it can feel a little bit sort of closed. Like I was like, there must be more to this. Like this was the kind of feeling. So I actually did a shamanic Reiki training, which I'll be honest, I think even doing this gave me a better understanding of it. And I think made me understand, actually, I don't think there's such a thing as shamanic Reiki. Mm-hmm. But well, in the sense, like, okay, I feel okay. Like the shamanic part of it is much more active, and then the Reiki is the passive, and it's almost like the like doing like a yin yoga with a vinyasa yoga kind of thing.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, because I'm like, yeah, there is a branded shamanic Reiki, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's very
strange. Yeah. It was, and this was just interesting for me to kind of explore that in a way that I hadn't really questioned. And then ended up doing like a holy fire Reiki training, which this then kind of is a very kind of different type of system and approach, and sort of kind of went down this path a little bit, and then almost went the other way and went towards you more in the traditional way. So I've kind of gone back and forth, where it's like going more Western Reiki, going more traditional. And you know, in my teaching, I like the fact that I'm able to kind of share, like, there are different approaches, there's different opinions on this, you know, and help, you know, the people I'm teaching to kind of just form their own opinions on it and just feel it, experience it, and like go from there, actually.
We're all different, and that's such a beautiful, respectful approach to it. But yeah, I think like there were over 150 schools, different schools of Reiki. So there is a moment, but I think a lot of them are, again, because people experience something and they try to make sense with cultural references that may be closer to them, because going to Japan is a little expensive and far for most of us. So then we, all those sensations, we start like thinking they're different, but at the end we end up at the same place, which is the beautiful part. Like you and I were talking about like certain rituals in Holy Fire that actually can be done in a traditional way. You get to the same place. So, and I think that's the important thing, like no matter what the way or the road is, at the end we do reach, if we practice respectfully and, you know, with the right state of mind, we reach the same place, which is visiting you in your garden. Just kidding. Like that's like my plan. I'm actually like planning my vacation there. So I also have a question, because I've been asking a little bit, and obviously like the Reiki precepts in some trainings, they skip over it, but they're really the core of the practice. They're very important. So I love to ask people, what's your favorite precept and why?
Yeah. And I think this is actually quite a good point, what you just said as well, because when I first did my level one training, I skipped over them. And it was only when I came back to them later on that I really started to feel what they were all about. And I think, you know, for me, the one that I suppose is traditionally called work hard, but the words I use, I do my work honestly, is probably the one that resonates with me the most in terms of trying to do my practice, my teaching, and kind of like everything in my life with just like integrity. And naturally, you know, we kind of fall off, and we have to catch ourselves when we're like, okay, am I holding back here out of fear or laziness. And really, when you're doing sessions on people or teaching people, you can't do this unless you're practicing. It doesn't work. Like, the people you're doing it with will feel it. You won't feel good. Things won't feel in alignment. And so I think that's the one that kind of resonates with me the most.
Oh, that's a beautiful answer. And I have now to ask you the one that is more challenging, or you're like, oh God, that precept again.
The more challenging precept. So interestingly, the way that I often practice with the precepts, I kind of will kind of say one sentence and then kind of feel in my body and what's going on. And it will then often bring up, you know, the anger, the worry, or things that are getting in the way of me being able to feel kind of grateful or kind. And I feel like quite often, like, because it's not, when I sort of do the anger or the worry, it's not then surprising that stuff comes up. And quite often with the gratitude ones, I do actually just drop into this lovely state of feeling grateful. But the kindness one or compassion one, this is the one that actually for me often brings up a lot of kind of things that are getting in the way of me being able to be as kind, as compassionate and compassionate as I want to. So I feel like this is my sort of, this is probably the most challenging one actually.
And it's beautiful. I remember one training, and again, I've taken many trainings too. They say how the precepts build up. Like you start with clearing the anger, the worries, the gratitude comes in, and the compassion is like it's the last one that you achieve. So when you're saying that, it's like, well, yeah, because that's the one that's going to clear. It makes a lot of sense, right? Because we still need to clear all that anger and worry to be fully compassionate. So it's a very, very challenging one in the world lately. It seems like it's not only challenging for you, but for most people. I've gone a little bit mad. Thank you for sharing that. And the other thing is, I think before we go to the oops, which is how I close the interview, I want to, like, if I'm a new practitioner, beyond obviously finding my voice and practicing every day, one tip, like, or one check, something I should check to see if I really should go professional or not.
I think that's a really good question, actually. I think for me, it was like, as I mentioned, it was the first thing in my life where I had felt the most excited about something. It was like very clear that it was something different to maybe what I'd experienced with other, like, for example, I always thought I wanted to be an artist. This felt different. I think, you know, there's also something to be said for, it's not that there's just one thing, that everyone, that's just one thing, you know, same as like, there's not just one partner, for us. And so it, you know, also just being accepting of the fact that, you know, maybe actually Reiki is your one thing, but actually maybe there's a few different things that you could do, and you just kind of have to pick one. And then whatever you pick, you kind of, you know, throw everything into it. And then if that's not right, you can change and you can kind of try something else instead.
But again, a lot of what you say is take off the pressure, which I love, right? Like take off the pressure of having to pay from one day to the other the bills, build slowly. Take off the pressure that if I feel a Reiki, I failed at life, which is almost like what some people say, like, oh my God, it's my passion and I failed. In my case, I tried 3 times to have a Reiki business. It was the 3rd time that is literally a charm, right? The first 2 times, and like, I failed miserably because it wasn't the right way. It wasn't the right way of approaching a Reiki business that was right for me. So I think, as you said, like, try and change and don't put so much pressure. I love that.
It's, yeah.
And my question, because again, you're brave, you did your Reiki business, you're in Bali, a lady's stealing your bananas from the garden and you're not upset, so you're living by the Reiki precepts. One thing I love to share with everyone is one oops, and you shared a bunch of oops, honestly, about your business. But one oops that perhaps you use with your students as a teachable lesson and more related perhaps to your understanding of the practice than the business side.
So I would say this was the biggest one that happened kind of early on, where I kind of did my Reiki training. I started practicing and I was doing sessions on other people, and people were giving me really great feedback. And this spiritual ego kind of started to like show its face. And, you know, people were like, oh, that's so amazing, and having these really strong experiences. And so I was getting very excited by this. And I was like, right, let's make them even stronger. And so then I started throwing in all this other stuff. I started to throw in kind of crystals and doing all these kind of complicated hand positions and kind of pushing the energy around. And the sessions did kind of start to get stronger, but it was, they were also feeling quite ungrounded. And I could also start to notice I was like feeling kind of tired after the sessions. I started to get these like pains in my back, which I hadn't been experiencing before. And then I started to feel like a bit resentful towards doing the sessions because they were making me feel like tired and sore. And I could feel something, I was doing something wrong. So I went back to reading my manuals and I was like, oh, I've kind of like missed or misunderstood some quite like core principles here, and just like stripped everything back, really simplified, removed, you know, all the other bells and whistles I'd been throwing in, and went back to this like very cookie cutter kind of foundational hand sequence. And immediately I started to notice I was feeling more grounded. The people I was doing sessions with were feeling more grounded. I also realized there was something where I wasn't trusting that the Reiki was enough on its own. So this kind of validated this. And this was really important for me to have this experience. Now I do my sessions, I do use crystals and oils, but I use them in a very different way to how I kind of was then. And so I think this was probably, yeah, the biggest oops.
Thank you for sharing that so much. And I think you said also something very important at the end. You can use crystals, you can use, but not from a place of fear that the Reiki session is not enough. And yeah, I can imagine those sessions must have been very intense for you to be so drained, and everybody would be, it must have been fun though, at least for a couple of them.
It was, yeah.
But I think like, and it comes back to what you say, self-practice, right? We cannot trust this unless we transfer ourselves. Like we practice enough that we see it works for others and it works for us. So no matter what we do, like at the end, we always go back to self-practice. Even if you have a business for personal care, like, and you said from the beginning, and you were disciplined from the beginning, which most people are not. I wasn't for the first 4 years. So I know people like who hear the podcast, like there she goes again about the importance of practice, but it is a practice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely.
I'm going to add then one last question. Since we've been talking about self-practice, what's your favorite like technique or practice from the Reiki system?
Do you know what? It's just the hand placements, actually, just like really simple. Yeah, I mean, this is what I use the most. And it's interesting because I feel like with teaching, people often want more kind of complicated, complex stuff. And really, like my practice is so simple. Like I do enjoy the kind of meditation practices as well, but this is what I definitely use the most. It's just like the hand placements.
It's funny, they're simple, but they're not that easy to do a full hands-on healing session, fully present, without distraction. And I think that's the part we forget. It's not about placing the hands on yourself. It's doing it with presence and focus and being like fully aware all the time. It's quite challenging, honestly. It's harder than chanting because you fall asleep, you start itching, you get distracted, and like lady stealing bananas where like... It's I think it's simple, but it's quite hard. So it's a beauty, and also it's good because it's very embodied as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I think, again, you said it, we always want to put more to Reiki practice, but I think part of it is lack of trust, and now I will add is also because when we make it very simple, it becomes very hard, right? Because we have to be present. One last thing before we end, obviously you offer your trainings for whoever is going to Bali, but do you want to give us a little bit more details about what you offer? People do have to live there. They can go for like a week. Also, what online is offering, if you have anything set up or perhaps a little bit of an advance of what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing trainings both in Bali and also online. So I do kind of regular group trainings in Bali at the moment, also one-to-one trainings. And then with the online stuff at the moment, it's all one-to-one. But actually, you know, I'm hoping to then start offering kind of group trainings online as well for people who, you know, can't get to Bali for whatever reason. And so, yeah, there really is quite a lot of options. You can do it in person, online, in a group, one-to-one. So whatever kind of, you know, suits you.
Perfect. And I'll be sharing all those in the notes of the podcast so people can reach you and enjoy that wonderful energy of yours and also have a little bit of that escape. Like, it's a beautiful way to have like almost a retreat, even if it's online, and spend a little time in Bali with you. Because at the end, nowadays, there is no distance and no time in Reiki practice. So I really encourage all of you, you have questions for Kate, to reach out and also maybe just ask her about her life. Thank you so much, Kate, for saying yes to this interview. I really, really appreciate it. And I love getting to know your story.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me. This is really nice for me to do as well.
Perfect. See you soon.
All right. Thanks, Natalie. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Dive into Reiki podcast. You can read a full transcript of today's interview at diveintoreiki.com/blog. If you found this episode helpful, please hit the subscribe button, leave me a review, or just share it with your friends. It makes all the difference. Thank you. Gracias. Merci.